Government Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. I'll be with you for the next hour, and I want to welcome everyone on this July the 24th on the West Coast, and now July 25th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Well, we've got a great show lined up for you this evening, and before I introduce tonight's guest, I have a couple of words to say. I've been trying to do some work on my website all day and having much success. Special thanks to Apple Computers for the nice upgrade and finally getting around to getting all the bugs out of the email and the iWeb software. They've done a lot of really nice things, and so if any of my listening audience and my website visitors have had a problem logging into the site and getting information, I apologize, but it wasn't my fault. There was major upgrades going on with their servers and the whole way the email and website design works. The results of their efforts are going to enable anyone that's, and this isn't really a commercial for Apple, but it's going to enable one to use an iPhone. Say you're somewhere in a faraway city or out in the country someplace and you remember something that you had to post to your website or some message that you wanted to communicate to a large group of people, you can literally go online with their Mobile Me feature. And so the upgrades that they're performing have a long-term benefit. It's been a nightmare for the past week. And again, I apologize to the people that try to get to some of my research documents or retrieve some archives. That said, while doing all this housework on my website today, I often listen to other shows on other networks, and there is definitely a strong indication that people are waking up. They're realizing something is terribly wrong with our country. Something is terribly wrong with society in general. And it appears that they're awakening to the fact that this is actually something that can be, I hate the word blame, but we can say the causative actions perpetrated by various components in our government, from the administration through our legislators and the Justice Department. There are many, many issues that are not being dealt with properly. There's obviously an alternative agenda at work, and people are awakening to that fact. Now, there are a lot of people who are just waking up to what's going on, and they bring a lot of the same stories and the same backgrounds that those of us who have awakened a bit earlier heard in the beginning. And just consider when you yourselves woke up, each listener that considers themselves to sort of have some kind of grasp on what is going on in the world, what is going on in other parts of the universe. You know that these things are wrong, and you know that many things that are wrong are being done to very good people. Some of these things are being done by good people, unknowingly, and then some are obviously well aware of what they're doing and what their intentions are. So we have different levels of consciousness colliding at the same time. And I started thinking to myself as I was listening to people talk about the Bible and talk about the Constitution, talk about their families, talk about their own lives, and how they had a sense of desperation in their voice, a sense of disgust for some of the things that are going on, a sense of intolerance, a general sense of unhappiness, and a determination that they were going to change things, that they were rediscovering who they are, and that they were beginning to awaken to the real purpose that they came here to live on this planet. Few of us ever ask ourselves that question in a lifetime, and yet I heard many people today, and over the past few days, but it seemed like today somebody threw a switch and everyone was really getting the picture. And so people are seeking answers. They're listening to shows like Evident Footprints. There are a lot of good radio shows out there. And people are waking up to the fact that some shows that they used to really rely on for information no longer are serving that need. They've moved beyond, in their consciousness, the need for entertainment. They've moved beyond the need for drama and excitement. And they are turning all of that former aspect of their personality toward higher truths. And it dawned on me, and I've known this for some time, but on the heart level, it dawned on me that we have a duty to help each other out. We're all one. We're all going to end up in the same place in the long run, despite what judgments we might make while we're here. We're going to go to a higher place, and if there's going to be any judging going on, we are the ones that are going to be judged. And under far more stringent regulations than what goes on down here. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean or imply that we will suffer any punishment, but we are going to have to come to a point where we accept responsibility for the things that we've done in our lives, and we're going to have to accept responsibility for the things that we haven't done in our lives. And why am I mentioning all this? Well, tonight's guest is someone who has carried a torch virtually for every family in this country, and really for every family around the world that is living under some sort of oppression. This person, our guest tonight, is a psychologist and has studied to be an expert in imparting information, especially to young ones. She would be a marvelous teacher in a teaching environment. She would be a marvelous leader in a teaching environment, or really in any capacity where her skills could be used to bring people's minds together and to stimulate imagination and creativity and a higher state of consciousness. And she suffered a tragedy that has, for the most part, gone ignored by most people in our country. And if only one person hears this message tonight, then I will have done my part in getting her story out. But hopefully every listener will take to heart what this woman is going to describe tonight on Evident Footprints. And just put for a moment, for the next hour, put yourself in her position and imagine that what she describes is happening to you. Or imagine it was about to happen to you. What would you do? Would you seek help from someone else outside, or would you have the courage to do what she's going to describe she did? And I know this person, I've known this person for a good year and a half now, and I've followed her case. I have researched many of the aspects of her case and other cases. And I can tell you that what our country is suffering from stems from the family. And her family has been dismantled and torn to shreds. And yet she holds on to the hope that one day that will be undone, and that her children will be returned to her, and she can go on with her life and recreate a new outcome, because the path that it's led her down right now is certainly not one that she would consciously choose, and I don't think any of my listening audience would do the same. And if at the end of the show, if you're in a position in any way, in any small way, to help out, to reach out and give her some kind of comfort for what she is still going through after many years, then you will be blessed by that. And with that, I would like to invite back to Evident Footprints. She was on the show when I was on the old network last year, in fact. And her name is Dr. Sheila Mannix. Sheila, how are you this evening?
Hi, Don. I'm doing quite well, thank you. And thank you for that introduction.
Well, you know, I wondered how I was going to introduce you, and that, yeah, I just looked at the whole day, and it made sense to say what I said. Your plight, your dilemma is, it mirrors many other people's plights in this country, and in our own way, we're all going through some kind of struggle like this. I don't think anyone could actually put themselves in your shoes and imagine what you're about to describe. But I'd like you to give just a brief overview of how this whole thing started, and you know, we'll go into some detail after you've had the opportunity to do this. I'm speaking about your initial involvement with the legal system in Cook County, Illinois.
Okay, because I think there's two ways to put it very succinctly. Number one, I came to the court, myself and my two young sons at the time, in the year 2000, to seek protection and relief from the domestic violence of my ex-husband, who I was divorced from in 1993. So 7 years later, I came to the court because the domestic violence was escalating because the boys were getting older and wanted to have a self, wanted to have a voice, wanted to count, and with my ex-husband, only he counts. And to came to the court to seek enforcement of child support. And these over eight years later, I've lost over $1 million, and my sons were judicially kidnapped in a hearing, what's called an ex parte hearing, where I was not there. I was a pro se at the time, or representing myself, because I'd already lost over $300,000 in direct payments to state court agents in the Cook County Court. And in an ex parte proceeding, the judge ordered that my sons are in the temporary custody of their abusive father, and this was on the same day that he illegally vacated an order of protection that we were able to get in Lake County. And with the direct testimony of my son that he was being physically threatened by his father, up to and including the night before, my 15-year-old son came to the court with me to testify directly to our need for protection. And the Lake County judge called the Cook County judge, and the Lake County order of protection was illegally transferred to Cook County. And again, on Halloween of 2005, the late Cook County Judge James G. Donegan, in an ex parte proceeding, vacated the Lake County order of protection. And with this phrase, hypothetical question, what would happen if I gave the kids to one parent? And with the court-appointed child lawyer David J. Wessel's response, I think it would devastate them. They gave the children in a temporary custody order to my ex-husband with no contact with me. And this was, for anyone who's aware of the judicial system, there's something called due process. I'm laughing because there is none in most family courts across the nation. But due process involves notice, where parties realize that something's going to happen in court that could affect them, and it requires notice, and then it requires your ability to respond to what someone is filing or wants to have happen, and an ability to be meaningfully heard. So when a party isn't present, they obviously have an opportunity to respond or a meaningful opportunity to be heard. Anyway, Judge Donegan did all this, there was no notice and there was no motion or any pleading before the court. There was no evidence. There was no testimony. There was no affidavit. There was no findings. There was no nothing. And I have been to state appellate court, to federal court, to the state Supreme Court, to the federal appellate court, and to the U.S. Supreme Court, and could not find a judge to enforce the most basic constitutional law, as well as the most basic statutory law, which means the statutes of the state of Illinois, the federal statutes, they would just not enforce. And I couldn't understand why until a few months later, in June of 2006, I came to understand a bigger picture of why my sons and I had absolutely no rights whatsoever in the court, as if we were in a dictatorship. It's certainly not as U.S. citizens or citizens of the state of Illinois, whose judicial system is guided by constitutions. So how's that for an introduction?
Yes. Now, very good. Let me, if I may, I want to let the listening audience know that I came to meet you over a conference call. You had been addressing a group back when Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism movie was still in the forefront of the Patriot movement. It had been out for some time. I was actually the National Theatrical Screening Coordinator at that time, and Fred Smart was hosting the conference call, and he urged me to come in on that night and listen, and I did, and I was just awestruck by what you had already endured at that time. And then I followed your case very closely. You basically told me the gist of some of what was going on, and I think I sort of surprised you because I started my own research into this, and I have a way of doing it that's quite unconventional, yet I ended up with many of the names that you already knew about in terms of who is involved in this. Now, it might be helpful. I was just going to add one more thing. It might be helpful to mention that there is a past history in Cook County related to the late Sherman Skolnick's work in exposing the judicial corruption known as Operation Greylord, and some of the same, or let's say relatives of those players in that are involved in what you're experiencing. And so I made a connection as to what was actually going on, and then you shared your story with me, and I saw that it was part of the same thing. And so, you know, your charges can be validated. This is not your imagination. These are real things. And I was able to read transcripts and hear word verbatim what these judges are saying as you were thrown out of the courtroom in your own trial so that they could just railroad you down the path to cover up all the corruption. Basically, you were scoring points left and right every time you were in court. So I thought I would mention that. Didn't mean to cut you off.
Not at all. To put it more, again, in context for your audience, yes, what thousands of Americans and their children are experiencing is fascism. And what ended up happening, and what's happening is as you mentioned, consciousness is being raised. The crimes being committed in the family courts have been committed against individuals who are professionals and who have professional expertise, and we're organizing and we're fighting back. And one of the key things is that we have gone pro se and are putting the truth in the record. And in Cook County, some very interesting things happen when you go pro se and you actually start putting the truth into the record. What happens is the judges say that you're harassing them and filing frivolous pleadings, and if you file something else, you'll be thrown in jail. So the very vehicle of access to the law, namely the filing of a pleading, and I know there are a small percentage of individuals who do file frivolous pleadings who don't have a grasp of the law, but that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is criminal judicial retaliation for citizens who file well-pled pleadings, warranted in law and in fact, and the reaction of the judges is to break the law against these citizens who are attempting to exercise a most fundamental constitutional right to equal access to the law,
mm-hmm.
and to due process of law.
Yes.
So what ends up happening in my situation is the law in Illinois, but of course it's supported by federal law, And I'm talking about a situation where there is actual domestic violence. There's a very small percentage of cases where there is not domestic violence and people file frivolous claims for domestic violence. But the phenomenon going around our country, and I can give you the names of attorneys who speaks about this, but attorneys are literally telling victims of domestic violence, don't say anything about it when you get to court. Because if you say something about it when you get to court, children will be given to the abuser. Now, someone will go, well, what are you talking about? That's crazy. Well, it's not crazy. It's actually sociopathic. And it's part of a pattern of practice in what we've discovered is a racketeering enterprise. Now, some people don't understand what a racketeering enterprise is. And very simply, think about it in terms of a number of individuals working together to accomplish a goal. So, for example, number of judges and lawyers and court-appointed lawyers for children and court-appointed evaluators, custody evaluators, therapists, these types of individuals working together to a common end, and the common end would be for their personal financial gain. And this is what's going on. It's very well organized, and it's very easy to research it in court files because it's operating in direct violation of statutory and binding case law. The case law is what's created from the statute. So what ended up happening in my case is just that, this pattern of practice of giving the children to the abuser to drain all the financial assets of a person, of a family. There's other aspects of the crimes in these family courts, which Dr. Shirley Moore can speak about, and Dr. Roger Brown can speak about. And these involve other aspects of theft of public services, which the ex-governor of Illinois, George Ryan, is currently serving time in federal prison for. Theft of public services and fraud against the government, which involves illegal acquisition of federal funds by these state court agents. But what ended up happening in my situation is they thought that I was the heiress of the Rand McNally company fortune, partly because of their own confabulation, these are the judges and attorneys, but also partly because of my ex-husband telling them that my family had large amounts of money and that there was a million-dollar trust fund for my sons. And, of course, there is no million-dollar trust fund for my sons. He claimed that my father created this trust fund in 1995 for my two sons. Again, of course, there was none. But as soon as my ex-husband told them this, and judges and attorneys confabulated that I'm the heiress of the Rand McNally company fortune, and the reason they did that is that my predecessors were the Sperrys, and the Sperrys applied gyroscopic principles to create many inventions, including the stabilizer and the Navy ships, as well as instruments for instrument flight, including the turning bank indicator, artificial horizon, chart compass, things like this. So the first Sperry company was the Sperry Gyroscope Company, and the spinoff was Sperry Rand Corporation. So the lawyer and judges got these dollar signs in their eyes, thinking that I was the heiress of the Rand Valley Map Company fortune, and my predecessors were quite brilliant inventors, but they were not that interested in creating large amounts of money. They were more focused on science versus business. Anyway, the point is that that's how my family got dragged into the Cook County Circuit Court racketeering enterprise. And so, Don, while this was all happening, while a fabricated custody battle was created in direct violation of statute law, because you can't have a custody battle if there's domestic violence, and all these individuals started getting appointed to our family's case, for which I had to pay, and I came to the court for protection and relief because I needed child support enforcement and protection from domestic violence. All of a sudden, the deadbeat parent was now back at a corrupt court supporting and enforcing the domestic violence against me and my two young sons, forcing my sons to be with their abusive father, which was causing self-mutilation in my younger son. So runaway attempts by my older son, clear signs of trouble. But this was done with the blessing of the court and the champion of this child representative, David Wessel, who was assigned to act in the best interest of the children. He was acted in the exact opposite. And what ended up happening was I realized that I was powerless over what was going on, which is exactly what this child lawyer, David Wessel, said to me in my one and only meeting with him. And he literally said to me, and I quote, "You should view your situation as if you've been dragged into a dark alley and being mugged, and there's nothing you can do about it." End of quote. I swear to God on my life that this man said this to me verbatim in my one and only meeting to him, with him, on October 3rd, 2002. And the first thought I had, and I can't say the words that I said to myself, but I will tone them down, and what I said to myself was, "You are messing with the wrong mom." And the next thought I had was, "My God, how many other women has this man said this to?" I mean, I was a victim of domestic violence. I was used to being abused by my ex-husband. And now the court had appointed a man who was literally criminally intimidating me in violation of not only Illinois criminal law, which is the statute is 7 ILCS 5/32-A. This Article 32 of the Criminal Code in Illinois is interference with judicial procedure, and subparagraph 4A is harassment of a witness. So after he said that to me, he said, "The judge has power over your very life. Judges can order people to death. And now I have power over your children's lives, and you better be nice to me." So I was sitting in the room with a man who had been appointed by the court to have power over my children's lives. My parental rights, my federally protected, constitutionally secured parental rights were usurped by a financial motive. Financial motive was to have this man assigned, and we'd have to pay his, I have to pay his bill. The order was entered that I had to pay him his retainer, and the later reallocation by the court. It's never happened. And then he insisted that evaluators had to be assigned in conspiracy with the judge on the case, Thaddeus Matchnick at the time, and my own attorney, Sandra Nye, and my ex-husband's attorney, Michael Petchnick. Now, in conspiracy, they started appointing these evaluators. The first evaluator extorted from me and my family across state lines in Connecticut 26 $15,000 for the first report. A report that said that I was, alleged that I was severely mentally ill, and on a scale from 1 to 100, I functioned at as a 50. Now, at the time this extortive report was being made, I was trademarking the curriculum I had written for the school I was founding and had run into some zoning issues in the local town and had filed a potential case form to the Institute for Justice in Washington, D.C. and was given pro bono representation by Kirkland and Ellis. So, obviously, I wasn't someone who was severely mentally ill, delusional, should be on vacation, and barely functioned.
Yes, Sheila, if I can put in a word just briefly here. I'd like the listening audience to just listen to this woman talk. You've all heard someone who's a bit off their rocker or has fallen off the turnip truck, so to speak. And this woman is absolutely brilliant and has self-taught herself the law. And I can tell you that she can recite the codes from memory. She's got a photographic memory. So we're not only talking about someone with a photographic mind, someone who's absolutely brilliant. You can hear how clearly she speaks. She speaks with more authority than most attorneys and judges. I'll tell you that. Okay. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to
I appreciate it, but I really do believe that we're all brilliant and that God gives us different gifts, and it's up to us to use those gifts in service of each other. And so in the middle of all this, obviously my faith was tested to the maximum, especially with the suffering of my own children. What parent does not want to protect their children from abuse, does not want to have control over their children's not only daily safety, but their education, their medical care? All these things have been stripped from me because they thought I was the heiress of a fortune. And these things have been stripped from me by criminals in black robes.
Yes. Now, it would be worthwhile pointing out here, Sheila, that at the point where these judges, especially Judge Donegan, being so adamant about refusing your rights by not permitting you to speak, by not permitting you to bring witnesses, by intimidating and arresting and assaulting your court watchers, this he's protecting something, you see. This is the point that we're trying to get across to the listening audience, is that he's protecting the organized crime syndicate that's running this whole operation. This is something, because most people will listen to this and they'll say, well, I can't imagine a judge acting like that. Judges are supposed to be a referee, and they're supposed to be adhering to the law, and they're supposed to be fair, and they're supposed to give each side an equal opportunity to present their case. This is not happening at all.
Thank you, Don. Exactly. It's all on court transcripts. We have court watch witnesses who witness it. I had a court watch witness execute an affidavit, and she said she cried after the vicious verbal assaults that the late Judge Donegan did to me, perpetrated against me in a court proceeding October 14th, 2005, 2 weeks before he took the kids. So it ended up happening, and I don't mean to toot my own horn. What I'm trying to say is, blatantly fraudulent reports are created at extortive cost, and you have to pay it. Otherwise, in Cook County and in Lake County, Illinois, you're thrown in jail. We have moms and dads in Lake County, Illinois, and in Cook County, Illinois, that if they don't pay the child lawyers who are illegally assigned to our cases, because the case law in Illinois is very clear on the matter. One case, In re Wyckoff, actually came out and said, adding another lawyer to the mix is not worth the cost. But in the racketeering enterprises that we have clear evidence, and I actually got a ruling that I'll talk about in a minute, the racketeering enterprise operating in family courts across the country, and the evidence that we definitively have in Lake County and Cook County, Illinois, is that this is the mechanism of the usurping of federally protected parenting rights, property rights, liberty interests, and basic rights to what criminals get in criminal court. We don't get it in family court, and individuals are routinely threatened with jail and incarcerated illegally by the family court judges in Lake and Cook County. It is as a means and as a pattern of practice of intimidation and harassment. Now, again, not only is this in violation of Article 32, interference with judicial procedure and the harassment of witnesses, it's also in violation of the federal statute, 18 U.S.C. 1512 and 1513, which is tampering with witnesses and retaliation against witnesses. So we have undeniable state and federal criminal acts being committed by the judges in Cook County, Illinois, conspiracy with the attorneys, and in conspiracy with the local attorney general. I mean the local state's attorney and the local sheriff's offices, as well as in conspiracy with the Illinois attorney general. All of these are statute bound to protect the citizens. And nobody's protecting the citizens from a criminal enterprise operating in the court. Now, I'm glad you brought up Skolnick and Operation Grey Lord, and as well as Operation Gambit, which FBI operations that took place in the Circuit Court of Cook County at the Seventh Circuit Federal Appellate Court in Chicago ruled that the Circuit Court of Cook County is operating as a criminal enterprise, and that ruling has never been reversed. And I've just gotten a ruling in the First District Appellate Court in Chicago that, in my opinion, and I assert with as a factual allegation backed up by material evidence, that the criminal enterprise that the Seventh Circuit Appellate Court ruled is operating in the Cook County Circuit Court has been reaffirmed by this April 2nd First District Appellate Court ruling that stated, and I quote, she, referring to myself, produced direct evidence regarding several other judges' involvement in the bribery scheme. End of quote. One of the things I wanted to talk about on the show tonight is how it is that that ruling came out on April 2nd. And the Illinois Attorney General hasn't contacted me. FBI Chicago hasn't contacted me. And the U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald's office hasn't contacted me. That rule stated that I produced direct evidence of judges' involvement in a bribery scheme. And the judges that were named during my testimony and during the proceeding, in which was given on October 13th, 2006, were the late Judge James Donegan, the current sitting judge, Karen G. Shields,
who is the daughter of one of the Grey Lord judges.
One of the convicted Grey Lord judges, David Shields.
Yes.
Judge Henry, who is the judge in my son's habeas corpus that I filed, and several other judges. But I basically referenced all the judges involved in my family's case, who are aiding and abetting the criminal acts of Judge Shields and Judge Donegan. And that includes the presiding judge of the Domestic Relations Division in Cook County, Judge Moshe Jacobius, the chief judge of the Circuit Court of Cook County, Judge Timothy Evans, as well as multiple judges involved in my family's case, including Judges Hamilton, Mathine. I've been in front of 23 judges in the year 2007.
I was going to ask how many judges have handled this case, and I mean this is just as astounding. Even O.J. Simpson didn't have that many judges in a murder trial.
Yeah, you know, and to get focused here, the point is that they produced these false reports, and I went through two rounds of this racketeering enterprise because with the false report, they coerce you under duress with the false report obtained with bribery and extortion. And in my case, it was across state lines because they wanted my family's money in Connecticut. So clear federal jurisdiction is engaged. Where some could argue that the extortion of money from families that occurs within a state like Illinois would certainly engage RICO because of what I'm about to say, and that these circuit courts are corporations. That's the enterprise. And the effect on interstate commerce extends to the illegal fraudulent use of federal funds in these circuit courts. So we've got definite civil state federal RICO operating in all of our courts, families in our country. So what ended up happening basically is I started collecting the material evidence of the criminal acts, which in part was the basis of the First District Appellate Court that I produced direct evidence of judges involved in bribery schemes. And I started collecting evidence basically after David Wessel told me that I should view my situation as if I'm in the dark alley being nubbed and there's nothing I can do about it. I immediately started to document everything, send letters to my attorney and to David Wessel, which were basically letters of notice, so that all their acts, I'm currently writing a RICO action, can be proven to be intentional and in conspiracy with each other and the judges involved. Anyway, I collected enough evidence, and I started networking with some other, primarily moms, but now we have dads involved. And in June of 2005, myself and Ms. Karen Meringer, a victim of Judge Shields and Mr. Wessel and a number of other individuals, we interviewed with the special agent of the FBI, and Karen went on to wear a wire in one of her attorney's offices. And we co-founded the organization Illinois Family Court Accountability Advocates. Criminal judicial retaliation against us was immediate. Karen being threatened when I was court watching for her. And Judge Donegan, after our first peaceful assemblage, and for the listeners who don't know this, and I know that many of your listeners do know this, there is a U.S. Constitution First Amendment right to what's called association, a right to association, a right to peacefully assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances. And so we formed this organization, and we have our First Amendment rights to association, to peacefully assemble, and to petition the government for redress of grievances have been repeatedly violated by state and federal court judges and individuals acting on their behalf in conspiracy with them. So we held our first peaceful assemblage, I think it was September 28th, 2005, outside the Thompson State Building in downtown Chicago, which is kitty corner to the police center in downtown Chicago, where the Circuit Court of Cook County is based. And basically within a month is when my children were taken. In two more months, Judge Shields threatened Karen from the bench that she would be incarcerated if she filed any more documents. So then 3 months later on court transcript, Judge Donegan referenced what the illegal act that Judge Shields did to Karen, which was sever her access to the court in violation of Supreme Court rules. In Illinois, Supreme Court Rule 137, if you're going to sanction someone, you have to do it with what's called specificity. You can't just say, your pleadings are harassing, without pointing out where's the harassing statement. And obviously, Karen's pleadings were not harassing. Karen's pleadings were making factual allegations based on evidence that the judge was, in fact, harassing Karen. The judge was, in fact, committing illegal acts against Karen. But in gross acts of abuse of power, the judge is flipping. Now, I'm a clinical psychologist, and one could argue with confidence that the behaviors of the judges and attorneys, court-appointed individuals involved in these racketeering enterprises in our nation's family courts, are individuals who are exhibiting behaviors that are similar to behaviors of individuals who have been fully evaluated and diagnosed with severe psychopathology, specifically severe characterological and personality disorders with sociopathic features, including pathological lying and paranoid projection. So what we're talking about specifically are individuals who've gone through law school and who've taken oaths of office or have pledged to follow ethical code of conduct and professional codes of conduct, and who have chosen consciously chosen to take profession in the public trust, who are literally selling children's flesh for money. You know, and I wanted to talk about this tonight, Don, because I wanted to talk about a recent event in Maricopa County, Arizona, but I wanted to build up to it.
Yes, can I interject something here in regard to that? And I know you have a lot to say, and I'll be brief. And it goes back to when I was researching this. I ended up looking at documents in Maricopa County. And when I compared that to the things that you were telling me, and I think you were quite surprised at some of the names I came up with, because I was able to find the names of certain aldermen. Baldy is one of them. I think he's in Park Ridge. I found his name in real estate documents in Arizona. Now, that is not a crime in and of itself, but what I found was that these individuals, these judges, were involved in pure trusts. Many times it's judges and attorneys involved in the same trust, and that these in other words, the proceeds, folks, that are leaving the courts in Illinois are being laundered through a real estate mechanism at the Maricopa County Recorder's Office, using fictitious names, using a system of changing one or two letters in the first name, or reversing middle names and first names, or using an initial in the middle name that refers one to a code that leads to where the property is or where the money's been sent. And this is also going on with Utah. Not exclusively, but the majority of the laundering is going from Chicago to Arizona, then to Utah, and back to Arizona. And I found people acquiring multi-million dollar properties. I looked these properties up. I was able to look up their values. But what I found was bogus divorce cases, bogus marriages, property transferred, trust deeds, war deeds,
Don, can you mention, sorry to interrupt, but could you also mention your research on the small business loans in Chicago?
Yes, I'll do that in a moment, okay? But what I saw is, for instance, I looked at how many names in Maricopa County or the Phoenix area, how many people have the last name Bush? And there were a total of 85 listings in the white pages. Yet there are over 2,000 properties owned by 85 families. Highly unlikely. And many of them are multi-million dollar properties. And then last year on 2007, over the 4th of July weekend, they were revamping the website, and they had hired a contractor in the computer business in, I think it was upstate Michigan, or no, not Michigan, Minnesota, in a closed military base. They had set this operation up where they were revamping the data in the database so they could begin tracking who was actually visiting the database. Now, this is a public facility paid with tax dollars. You should be able to go there as a citizen anywhere in this country. You should be able to go on that data into that database and look up a piece of property. You might be interested in buying, or you might be interested in checking on property prices or the availability of a property. You may be considering moving to the area, something legitimate. But this money laundering scheme is putting billions, if not trillions of dollars into these private, these pure trusts, which end up in Fidelity accounts. These are offshore accounts, and these guys are giving you a hard time in court, Sheila, because their throats will be slit if they trip up, if they make a mistake.
Well, now, that was actually the help.
Okay, now you mentioned the SBA loans. Now, this was interesting because one specific case, and I won't mention the name, but I was looking at a specific case of I had a lead. I had one lead on a trucking company, and I started doing research on this trucking company, and it led me directly to an SBA loan. This is the state printed, the state published SBA loan record, and I think I had looked at the year 2002. Now I'm taking into consideration what one of your members told me about the financial status. Hers, that she had already lost one of her children and they were threatening seizing the other one. And her husband, her ex-husband, had remarried and was claiming impoverishment, yet I found no fewer than four $644,000 loans made to him, over a 6 or 8 year period. And I found three more companies besides the one she told me about. And I found inconsistencies in the coding. They have what they call an SIC code that will demonstrate on paper what the money was loaned for, what the purpose of the loan was. And one would assume that this loan would be repaid somehow. The information we had was the trucking company basically was just part of the business, but that they were actually taking automobiles and bulletproofing them and then selling them overseas. And this is being paid for with the money that's being taken through these sham court proceedings that are criminally impoverishing family after family after family, victimizing the children. They seize the real estate, they foreclose on houses. You recently had your own house foreclosed as well.
Yes.
So you're not only crushed under this system, they take everything you have. You're literally put out on the street if it's not for the grace of someone.
Yes, and that's part of the pattern of practice because they want to prevent the citizens, the litigant, from being able to fight back. I mean, it gets to a point where you don't have the money to make copies for your pleadings, mm-hmm. let alone have the money to get to the courthouse.
Now, this company...
You're literally taken out at the knees.
Yes, this company, this trucking company, lists a subsidiary in Poland. And we had someone look into that, and it's the address doesn't even exist. The company doesn't exist, the address doesn't exist. Not only that, is once I found the code that they're using to sort of be a signpost for them as they're going through all these records, I can point out every bogus loan in the SBA loan list that's published. Now, there may be many that aren't even published, but I can definitely point out a $2 million loan to a company called Progressive Petroleum. They don't have an address. They don't have a phone number. They don't have a website. They don't have an email address. They don't have a president, vice president, treasurer, or secretary, and yet they were given $2 million. Progressive Petroleum. It's interesting. That's just one example, but that sticks out in my mind because they've given themselves loans several times. Now, this goes through the mayor's office in Chicago.
Yes, Daley.
Yes, this goes through Mayor Daley's office. And it's interesting that the head of the Democratic Party happens to have just gotten his wife put into the Supreme Court in the state of Illinois. Not too long ago. So, you know, these are not coincidences that this is going on. We know who's doing it, and hey, you know, they're supposed to be our public servants.
Well, Don, it's beyond coincidence, the things that are going on in many of our lives, and I've been blessed with meeting a gentleman who, as a boy, hung out around the Daleys. And he actually heard, and I trust this person, he said that he actually heard Papa Daly say that if you control the judges, you control everything. And I wanted to, this was another point I wanted to make on your show tonight, is that, and it's part of what I talked about when I was invited to speak last August 18th at the Family Preservation Day rally. Speech and many speeches can be found at the website, dcrally2007.com. You just scroll down the left side to speakers, and then you'll scroll down and you'll see names of many amazing Americans who are fighting, the crimes being committed against children for money by, sociopathic individuals who've chosen jobs in the public trust and who've taken oaths of office and sworn to uphold professional codes of conduct. Anyway, the point is that as a psychologist and as someone who ponders these types of things before the crime started happening to me and my children and my family, I pondered, you know, what's going on here. And it's really very obvious if you look at it from the criminal mind. Mob families are territorialized, as we all know. They've been in our country for a very long time. They can only function with the cooperation of public officials. I mean, we know this. We know that the police commissioner or the alderman or the governor or the attorney general or even higher ranking officials, as well as judges and et cetera. We know this. I mean, this is proven. If you go on the internet and you put in, you know, Compton, there's wonderful people who compile things, but there's this thing that I just came across on Google, putting in corruption or whatever I put in, something to that effect, and there's a list that someone's compiled of all the public corruption, and this includes individuals in the IRS, individuals in the U.S. Attorney's Office, legislators and judges and judges in the federal court, judges in the state court. The whole idea of judicial immunity is just such a joke when we have definitive cases where judges and other high-ranking officials have been convicted of crime. Anyway, the point is that if you think about it, the mob, and I'm talking about organized crime families, syndicated, you know, families, they have to have a revenue source. I mean, in the end, these individuals are business people. They're criminals.
Duh, get a job, you know.
Yeah. Well, you could say the same about people in Washington. But
yeah.
the point is that they're looking for a revenue source. And what better revenue source than the American taxpayers' dollars?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what they've done. And
now, I might add here too. I might add that I see the same law firms, and you know, in this laundering aspect, especially what's attached to these documents on Maricopa County. It's interesting. Every time there's a sham deal up there on the database, they have a disclaimer page, unofficial copy or unofficial document. Why would you post on a city's database or a county's database or a state's database? Why would you post unofficial information? Well, that's the tip off that's part of the scam right there. And
yeah. Let me put something in context, John. With regard to what you've discovered in Maricopa, because that was because of something that happened that I informed you about specifically. After Ms. Meringer and I interviewed with the FBI in Chicago and informed Illinois Family Court Accountability Advocates, we basically picked several exemplary cases of the crimes being committed in the Cook County Family Court, and we collected all the evidence to prove a racketeering enterprise operating in the court. Exactly 1 year after we founded ISCAA, in June of 2006, we issued our first national press release on Business Wire, stating that ISCAA had taken on the corruption in the Cook County Court. And the response was phenomenal. And two things are of import. Number one, we were contacted by victims of probate courts around the country, as well as bankruptcy courts. I was also connected with victims of veterans benefits crime. And the key here is that I was contacted by a woman in Utah, a lovely woman who said, you've really got the local racketeering enterprises down. Now you need the missing piece, and the missing piece is the interstate enterprise that's being laundered through Maricopa Recorder's office that involves the Sicado mob family. Now, you know, I'm not one who jumps on the bandwagon to talk about a mob family, but all you have to do is turn on A&E and watch Bill Curtis, who regularly does shows on the mob activity, especially in Chicago, but also around the country, New York, Florida, et cetera. So this gal gave me the name and phone number of this person to call in Arizona who was an informant of this mob family. And I did. And I introduced her to one of the co-members of our organization, Michael Lynch, and we were taught what was going on. And again, it's some of what you've already mentioned, but what we were taught was that the mob generation, which is called like the old gangster or the original gangster OG, they were getting older, and a new generation of mob individuals in these families had come up with a really ingenious criminal business idea, and that was to access taxpayers' funds through the U.S. judicial system. The best way I can describe this in a very simplistic way, without the in-depth sophistication of these seven individuals with expertise in finances, financial vehicles, real estate, mortgages, technology, their attorneys, all the expertise that someone starting a corporation would need. It was done very surgically. A very well conceived criminal enterprise was created by this next generation of mobsters to access private funds, in terms of private family funds, corporate funds, but also access federal taxpayers' funds. And that's why I've gotten the attention of the IRS on the matter. But the point is that the best way I can describe this, because it is pretty sophisticated and quite ingenious, is, for example, imagine that one of the large insurance companies in the country, one of the larger ones that is national, has, as everyone would imagine, a corporate firewall where they have their own corporate software and don't want anyone getting into their corporate software, because in their corporate software is all the names of their clients, all of their claims, and all of the paying out on their claims. And what literally has happened, what this mob enterprise has done, one aspect of the criminal enterprise, is they've hacked into the government software program that has all of our information in it if you're involved in a court. And they've taken this information and through a sophisticated system, code-based system of identity theft, and they've fabricated cases. This involves Child Protective Services agencies as well as divorce court and other courts, bankruptcy court, probate court. They've created false cases, and they are stealing taxpayers' monies, federal funds that go to subsidizing these court systems. So
yes, can I interject something
and that's
here?
Where you, yeah, and I just wanted to let your audience know that is when I about 8 months later, you were on the telephone call because I was being aggressively, Judge Donegan was attempting to aggressively incarcerate me because we were exposing all this.
Mm-hmm.
I had been sent by the organized crime informant a book of all the documents tracing Judge Donegan's illicit acts and the apparent illicit acts of Karen Shields and a number of other judges and attorneys involved in my own case, involved in other cases, and even higher-ranking officials. So
mm-hmm.
we were getting these documents, and we were putting them into the record. We started putting them into the record in August of 2006 with a motion that we devised with the title of the following. Motion for judicial admission or denial of knowledge of and or participation in alleged criminal acts within the cross state lines by the judges in the Circuit Court of Cook County. And the retaliation and the reaction to these motions with one document from the Takad Madoff family informant was phenomenal. Myself and two other moms were, a false police report was created against us by Karen Shields, where she alleged that we were harassing her.
And you were labeled terrorists, basically.
And then the Cook County Sheriff's Police Detective who took the report, that was on August 16th, she did that. The day before Karen was going to present her motion, documents from the mob family informant attached, Judge Shields called to say that we were harassing her and her staff. When in fact the opposite is what was going on. Then the following day, August 17th, 2006, the Cook County Sheriff's Police Detective took the report, the false report, and he then turned around and took mine, Marie's, and Karen's driver's license pictures from our state of Illinois driver's license, put it across the top of what's called a statewide intelligence bulletin, as if we were like Al-Qaeda or something, looked like an Al-Qaeda wanted poster. You know, we're talking three moms.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's
disgusting.
And on this intelligence bulletin, it stated that we were a physical threat to Judge Karen Shields, who was destroying the lives of our children and destroying us. So we were an unlawful threat to Karen Shields. We were a lawful threat for exposing this person.
Yes.
And through gross acts of abuse of power.
Mm-hmm.
She filed these things against us. And the third thing that was done was our personal information was turned in to the Illinois statewide terrorism intelligence agency. So three months have never done anything wrong except stand up to the corruption of judges and attorneys and court-appointed individuals that was destroying our children and ourselves. Think about the theft of public services and the fraud against the government and the use of taxpayers' dollars to create this fraudulent thing against us.
Sheila, I want to point something out, too, so the audience, the listening audience, understands how they're able to infiltrate this system. And let's back up for a moment. The software that they're using, as best we know, and I have even talked to the creator of this software, it's developed by a company in Washington, D.C. called Inslaw. The man who runs that company is Bill Hamilton, and the software is called Promise, P-R-O-M-I-S, all capital letters. When Promise software was created by Inslaw, it was designed to assist the judicial system in tracking bankruptcy cases. That was initially the purpose, because they can be quite complex. You have all these different financial schemes going on at the same time. You have accounts in the red, the assets possibly in the black, and these cases are tracked. You can put as many as 700,000 command line codes into it, so it's very versatile. This was stolen by the Justice Department, and Bill Hamilton actually won a judgment against the Justice Department, and still never was paid for the money. Today,
yes,
this happened.
Don, I want to can I interrupt you for a second? Earlier when I said that if you Google corruption and there's somebody who's compiled a list,
yes,
that list is the inflaw, is the case you're referring to. It has right. You know, this is a list of high-ranking officials and public officials corrupting, and, mm-hmm. and the cases and the federal state cases, and actually on that list are the Inslaw cases where they stole the software from this man. But anyway,
okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
So the listening. Thank you for pointing that out. The listening
Google
audience now knows that this is actually sprung or seeded through the Justice Department. Now, this has been used for international money laundering. This has been used to infiltrate computers of banks, governments, intelligence agencies, law enforcement agencies around the world. And it's been done ever since the Bush administration, probably even going back into the Reagan administration. This was already occurring.
Yes.
The group you're referring to in Arizona would be the East Valley Group, if I'm not mistaken. And they are using the Promise software, which has back doors. In the computer industry, it means they have ways to get in without anybody noticing it. And this is how they are manipulating basically what are tax-free real estate transactions. Now, let me add one point here. As I'm looking at these records, at one point I read a divorce case, and I'm going to quote the names because these are fictitious. There was a name, Alicia Bush, and her husband, Mark Bush. Now, why do you think I was looking at the name Bush? Any ideas? Okay. Take a guess. So I'm looking at the divorce proceedings and the settlement. And for a fee, I think it may have been $100. It's been over a year that I've seen this. It may have been as little as 10, but I think in this case, it was a transfer fee of $100. The former Mrs. Bush acquires a home that's worth at least $775,000, and they give the address of this home. And in his half of the divorce settlement, he gets another property, and it gives the address of that. Now, he didn't appear in the hearings. In fact, you find such inconsistencies in these documents. One of your members' documents, her husband, used two or three different names within the same document. The document begins, his pleading begins with the name Robert, and by the time you get to the end, it's all of a sudden Richard. And this is entered into the court record. It's astounding that this obfuscation, which is so blatant, can pass as a legal document. Now, in Maricopa County, these two houses in this particular divorce case, which smelled it stunk to high heaven as far as I'm concerned. And I went to Google Earth and looked for the house, both houses actually, and I found them on Google Earth. So they existed. Now I went back into the database doing a search under the address, and it comes up no such address exists. Kind of interesting. Now I went a step further, and I went through the white pages looking for the phone number of that address, and the name registered was Dr. J. Carey Bush, which I found really interesting. Was that John Carey Bush? I mean, they're so blatant with the names and the ID theft that they're using. It's utterly ridiculous. So here's a guy that's in a house. This house has to be somewhere between $1 and $2 million, based on the neighborhood it's in. And all the other houses around there. This is not a little shack we're talking about. This is a very expensive piece of real estate. And there's no registration on the tax rolls of this house. There's no tax evaluation. It shows up as not existing. But they made a mistake. It shows up on Google Earth. And it shows up in the white pages. And there are names. So I'm just giving you an example of that's just one entry. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of them.
Yes, it's an estimated $12 billion child trafficking industry, absconding with huge amounts of taxpayers' money and private monies. And of course, again, you know, people are not paying taxes on these monies. And of course, the IRS is very interested in number one, people not paying taxes, and number two, illegally absconding with federal tax money. But of course, if you look at the list of individuals who are high-ranking public officials who have been found guilty or indicted in lawsuits, it also includes IRS agents and IRS individuals, and you know that's a whole different show on what the IRS actually is. But one of the things, John, how much time do we have left? Because isn't it after 1 o'clock?
Oh yes, we went over a little bit, but we're okay. We can wrap it up in a moment.
Okay. Well, then let's bring it together. So the point is that I was contacted by these individuals who hooked me up with the organized crime family informants, and actually the gal who contacted me in Utah, she said two of her brothers were involved, and one of her brothers actually was just sentenced to 12 and a half years in prison for his involvement in a sham real estate development in Maricopa County. But number one, there are a lot of crooks out there in black robes and with law degrees, and I wanted to just point out that there are a lot of very, very good and honest people, and I've talked with many, and many of the individuals who are trying to fight back are killed, are disbarred, and are retaliated against in the same way that the citizen litigants are retaliated against. And we've been working to organize so that we can fight back and still be able to put food on the table. Second, sometimes I'm on blogs or on exchanges on the internet, and I'm the first one in line for having legitimate anger. But I think we need to remember that, I should say that differently. Try to remember that I can't judge another person. I don't have a right to judge another person. I mean, I actually do have the credentials to evaluate psychopathology, and I certainly can do that when the person is my patient. I am allowed to make observations of psychopathology. But the point is that it really isn't our place to judge another person. I was told that U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald was told that he would get a bullet to the head if he prosecuted the criminals in the family courts in Chicago. Now, I'm not going to judge the man, because that's not my place. But what I can do is take advantage of what's been provided to me. And what's been provided to me this year was what I mentioned earlier in April. It was at the end of February, but it was corrected and reissued on April 2nd in the D'Agostino Lynch case in the First District Appellate Court, ruling that I produced direct evidence of several judges involved in a bribery scheme. I then took that ruling after putting in the Lake County Recorder's Office public record. I was through my network that putting an affidavit and evidence of public record, like a recorder's office, like they do in Maricopa County. If it's unopposed for 30 days after being served upon the parties involved, it stands admissible as direct evidence in a court proceeding. Now, again, this is the court file. This is the public record. It's public document 6324306. It can be accessed on the Lake County, Illinois Recorder's Office website. So if anybody listening to the show would like to see my affidavit with attached documents from the Chicago Mob family informant to some of them and some information, please go to the Lake County Recorder's Office of Lake County, Illinois website and pull up document 6324306 and you need a credit card, and they probably, they charge out the wazoo, in Lake County, very wealthy county, because they, do a lot of illegal things. But if, like, for example, McHenry County, you can get right on the website and get a document for a small fee. But in Lake County, Illinois, you have to spend $50 a month to even access documents that you could then use your credit card to pay and print off a certified copy. But anyway, again, document 6324306. Anyone who would like to see some documents. Now, I entered that on March 27th, 2008, after I got the ruling from the First District Appellate Court, basically verified me as a witness, victim, and informant of the civil acts in Cook County. I then took that Lake County Recorder's Office document attached to a federal TRO and injunction to the federal court in the Northern District, and I appeared in front of Judge Milton Shader, who was an older gentleman. And I've been to federal court twice before. I've been in front of five federal judges. And Judge Shader initially treated me as the other judges in a very condescending, dismissive way, because I'm pro se and I'm not an attorney. But he couldn't get around the fact that I had attached to my pleading, to my complaint, a public document. He couldn't get around that. He couldn't get around the First District Appellate Court ruling that I had produced direct evidence several judges involved in a bribery scheme. And he came around. And I just wanted to share with your audience, my father was a very interesting man, but he could be extremely verbally abusive in his belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
And through my relationship with my father, who was a successful businessman who retired at 42 and gave his life to public service, because that's what Jesus would do. He was a deeply religious man with very strong values and morals, but threatened his belief system and yield for your jugular. And I learned how to stand up to severe personal attack, especially when I was winning debate. And my father passed away when I was in federal court. Actually, I was in federal court December 28th and 30th of 2005, fighting for my children's rights and my rights. And my father passed away on December 29th, 2005. But, my sons and I weren't able to process any of that. But, the point is that, through that adversity, my father taught me how to stand up and articulately argue with anybody. In fact, once, I think it was probably 1996, I said to my father, you know, Dad, I've asked God why he gave me, you know, speaking simplistically, why he gave me a dad like you, and I think I figured it out. Because if I can stand up to your personal attacks, I can stand up to anybody. And God works in mysterious ways, because I can hold my own in any courtroom against vicious attacks by any judge, state or federal.
Well, it sounds like this Judge Shader is a breath of fresh air after all.
Well, what ended up happening was he was just attacking, but he's an older gentleman of my father's generation, and so I knew he liked football. So after he dismissed my injunction, I came in with two post-judgment motions, and one of the post-judgment motions had to do with needing the transcripts and the audio tapes. So that I could verify that the transcripts were correct. And of course that was backed up with case law, because I do have wonderful individuals in my network who are exposing the corruption in the Northern District Federal Court in terms of the criminal altering of transcripts. But anyway, so he couldn't get around that, but he, in this pleading, which is, it was case number 83C-1883, if anyone has PACER and wants to see some of the motions. At the end of this pleading, when I was first in front of Judge Shader on April 3rd, and he was quite condescending and dismissive and treating me like I was an idiot, and didn't know jurisdictional law or some other things. And I basically had to get my foot in the door and establish the ruling of the First District Appellate Court and get a court transcript with exactly what Judge Shader provided me with when he did come around and start affording me some exchange. Excellent transcript, excellent. But he was using these analogies on April 3rd, and they were very troubling. The analogies was that he was like a waiter, and I was at the wrong table. And he was using the analogy to indicate that I hadn't engaged federal court jurisdiction correctly. And I do have a question about that, but I got my foot in the door a different way afterwards. The next analogy he used was he said, well, if three people say you're drunk, you might as well just make sound. And he used that analogy to basically communicate to me that I have to step down, that I have to stop arguing. And, of course, that's when I was invoking 18 U.S.C. 4, which is misprision of felony. But anyway, in my post-judgment motion, I had mentioned his metaphors and analogies, and I then stated respectfully, because I would never defile the sacrifice of individuals who have given their lives to provide me and my sons the opportunity to stand in the halls of justice where matters are supposed to be resolved with the law versus violence, especially being a domestic violence victim who's been threatened enough by not only my ex-husband, but by judges. I revere the sacrifice of the individuals who believe that they gave their lives to these spiritually based democratic principles that are a basis of our U.S. Constitution and our legal system. And after I made that introduction in the pleading, I stated, with all due respect, the following metaphor, that my sons and I recovered a fumble inside the 10-yard line with this ruling by the First District Appellate Court that I had produced direct evidence of several dozen of all the bribery scheme. And on behalf of the suffering children of our nation, we're going to take it in. And the plaintiffs have a right to know if the federal judiciary is going to continue to act like a defense in a goal line stand or impartial referees. And I believe that Judge Shader had the ethical virtue and the moral character to come around. And he gave me a checklist used by a Pennsylvania federal judge when people file a civil RICO action. Now, I've been drafting the RICO, and hopefully it'll be filed within the next month. But I've since, in my research on the matter, this actual, it's called a RICO case statement in the back of a book called Annotated Manual for Complex Litigation, Fourth Edition, I believe. And what I wanted to, with regard to the fact that it's not our place to judge. These individuals will be judged elsewhere in my belief system, and I basically already believe that they live in hell. As an aside down here, one of my favorite verses from the Bible is the following. And Jesus replied, the kingdom of heaven will not come with your careful observation, nor will people say, here it is, there it is, because the kingdom of heaven is within us and among us. When I became a parent, Don, I entered the kingdom of heaven, giving birth to my first son, Kevin, and then my second son, Brian. I touched eternity, and I have lived in the kingdom of heaven ever since becoming a mom. And I don't say that lightly. I actually have a more physical belief system than my Catholic upbringing, but I can quote the Bible with the best of them and understand the meanings and symbolisms pretty well from my religious upbringing. the point is that I do believe that these sociopathic individuals have sold their souls for money, especially those who have consciously taken jobs in the public trust. And it's not a place to judge U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald. We have not walked in his shoes. But it is our duty, in my opinion, it is our duty to each and every victim of these crimes to act as private attorney generals, as allowed by the RICO laws passed by Congress, and to file civil RICO actions under the criminal code, 18 U.S.C. 1961-1968. And I'm doing the best I can to do a RICO action that I'm going to be putting out on the Internet and sending to anybody who wants to see it that can be applied in your own family court and describes what the enterprise is, as Judge Shader gave me almost a RICO 101 class in my appearance in front of him on April 18th when he gave me this RICO check. You have to describe what the enterprise is, and the enterprise are our family courts within our counties. You know, Cook County is a corporation. So it's very clear racketeering enterprises in our family courts, and we can't rely upon our U.S. attorneys to file criminal RICO actions. As American citizens, we still have the right, though our constitutional rights are eroding, we still have the right to act like private attorney general, to file civil RICO actions, and we're going to do the best we can to get a template of these things out to anyone who has the wherewithal or who can find an honest attorney who will help them. Now, the key about RICO is you get your attorney's fees and costs paid by the criminals. Well, it's not a criminal act, but it's a civil action, but it uses the criminal code, federal criminal code, chapter 15. But that's the key. And once we can get the ball rolling, it will be a domino effect. It will send a clear message to these individuals who are selling children's flesh to the highest bidder in our country, family courts, and to the Child Protective Services agencies.
Yes, now Sheila, I would like you to give out your web address and any means you want to use to have people contact you, because I'm sure there's someone listening to the show tonight or in the near future to the archive of this show who is going to want to communicate with you, possibly even help. I suggested at the top of this show that anyone with a heart that can see and has the means to help out. You're talking, I'm talking tonight, and you're listening to a person that has become criminally impoverished by what has taken place. If you don't know what that means, find yourself without a job, without a home, without a means to feed yourself and to enjoy the basic amenities that you currently enjoy. And there are a lot of people who are depending upon the work that Dr. Sheila Mannix is doing on everyone's behalf. If that hasn't sunk in yet after an hour and 40 minutes, I don't know what will. But if you want to give out any contact information.
We have a YouTube site. When I was, I basically did a counteroffensive in Lake County, Illinois, and very quickly have to file the RICO action against that county. The YouTube site is www.youtube.com/ Measles of Mankind. Now, Measles of Mankind is from an Einstein quote. Nationalism is an infantile disease. It is the measles of mankind. So all lowercase, no spaces, Measles of Mankind. My email address is Sheila Mannix, SHEILAMANNIX, at yahoo.com. And so if you monitor the YouTube site, God willing, in about a month, will be putting up that the RICO action is available. The RICO complaint as a template for other people to look at is available.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I just want to note that I am not an attorney. I do not put myself out as an attorney. I'm not practicing law without a license.
No, this is not for purposes
right
of contacting you for legal representation. I want to make that clear.
I don't give legal advice, and I can't give legal advice, but as citizens of the country, we are allowed to assist each other to learn the law with our own abilities. And we can say, well, this is what I'm doing, and this is my situation, and this is what I'm doing. If you want to check out what I'm doing, go right ahead. And, of course, these are all public documents. But again, the Lake County Recorder's Office, document 63-24-306, the YouTube site, Measles of Mankind, and the speech on the DCRally2007.com website has my phone number on it. And give me about a month, and I'll have the document finished.
Okay, now do you still have the IFCAA website, or is that fallen by the wayside?
We didn't have the money to keep that up, and we've been so busy filing. We do a lot of different types of activism, and mine is primarily filing motions and complaints and creating the template for then other people to do what they want. And, of course, everybody tries to get legal help, but it's hard to find. There are a couple of terrific attorneys with who have integrity, who are helping us behind the scenes. Because two attorneys who stepped forward to help my sons were directly threatened by Judge Donegan. And, everybody has to make up their own mind, but I would never ask someone to lose their profession. So people have to make up their own mind. Of course, they can't help us very much if they're getting their food from the food pantry, too. I mean, I was a clinical psychologist, and it's very difficult to have a clinical psychology practice when you don't have your own children and you've been turned in as an alleged domestic terrorist.
Yeah, now, it may be worth my pointing out, just as a reminder, that the late Judge Donegan, after a visit from one of these Cook County Sheriff's police detectives in his chambers over that weekend suffered a severe fall, which I think was explained away as a heart attack. However, he had a severely broken neck. It's too coincidental that occurred after that visit. And I would...
I think Judge Donegan was given the directive to do away with me, to have me falsely incarcerated.
And he failed.
Aggressively on court transcript to do it on February 2nd and on February 7th, the year 2007. He failed both times by the grace of God. And the second time, the same Cook County Sheriff's police detective who made the false police report and turned us in as alleged terrorists for Judge Shields, the prior August 2006, he showed up at the second civil proceeding in front of Donegan. I immediately called this officer's boss, Sheriff Michael Anton in Maywood, Illinois, and said, why is this fellow here? And he said, well, he can't be there. He only investigates criminal stuff. So he basically let the cat out of the bag. Of course, I followed up with faxes and everything to document everything, and I was told that I would get a follow-up call, and of course I didn't. And I called, and no one ever called me back because I don't know who sent this Cook County Sheriff's police detective to my civil proceeding. But from my knowledge and experience of the criminal acts in the court, this person was sent there, and he was going to work in conspiracy with Judge Donegan and my ex-husband's attorney and the court-appointed child rep Wessel and the deputies, Cook County deputies there. They were definitely given the directive to conspire to somehow get me incarcerated. I was removed from the courtroom three or four times. Whenever I tried to quote the law, quote case law, I was removed from the courtroom. And by the grace of God, I was able to stay very calm. I actually used the cognitive technique of imagining that I was going in and out of the state championship field hockey game I played in when I was a junior in high school. So I just relaxed during the Beagle mugging. No matter what they did or said, I didn't provoke. I stayed completely calm. So I didn't give them any reason to arrest me. And at the end of that proceeding, I went up to this Cook County Sheriff's Police Detective and asked for his card and asked for his name. And he refused to give it to me and beelined into Judge Donegan's chambers. That was February 27th. On the weekend of March 3rd, Judge Donegan was found at the bottom of his basement stairs with a severely broken neck. He was buried immediately. I really question if that was an accident.
I don't, but that's my intuition speaking there. And one more point I would like to make. I had the opportunity a couple of months ago, and I'm still continuing this investigation because it leads into many other issues that are really at the core of the nation's financial problems. This is, if you imagine every holding company, title company, finance company, bank that's involved in this criminal enterprise, and it's across the country, there's a predominance of states represented and law firms. Some big law firms in Dallas and Houston are involved, also in Los Angeles, Sacramento, San Francisco, San Diego. The same finance companies have their names on baseball stadiums, football stadiums, basketball arenas, and then you see the same companies involved in this. Senator Karen Johnson, state senator in Arizona, spoke to me a couple of months ago, and I asked her if she was aware of the criminality, and she was very pleased to have heard from me, and she intimated that she was contacted in 2001 by the same Sucato family informant that you mentioned earlier, and that they had presented this to the FBI. The FBI took all the information, and the very next day they closed the case. So we can't even expect law enforcement to do anything about it. I mean, this is corruption through and through.
That's why I said that you know, we have to exercise the rights that we still have to start filing these civil RICO. We have to become private attorney generals.
Yes.
And I recommend everybody get on the internet, because you can get this annotated manual of complex litigation, fourth edition, right off the internet. You can copy the chapter on civil RICO, and you can get the RICO case statement right off the internet. And we have to start filing these, and we will engage attorneys, because They have the potential to make significant amounts of money, because again, RICO affords you triple damages and attorney's fees and costs. So, you know, this is a potential, we could keep attorneys busy and very wealthy for their lifetime with the RICO actions that are waiting to be prepared and filed with the crimes that are going on. We can't wait for our U.S. attorneys. We know what happens to them. Some get killed. Some are fired by what was proven in the Gonzales hearings of the unlawful influence of the White House on what our DOJ and our U.S. attorney is allowed to prosecute. So we can't rely. There's some very good law enforcement people, and they're trying. And obviously with the indictment of Congressman Renzi, who this informant gave the federal criminal prosecutors a book on Renzi back in 2001. Well, Renzi's been indicted earlier this year, and now this Utah informant's brother has not only been indicted, he and his wife have been convicted and sentenced. So
the only I read that case, and the thing that disturbs me is that he was given a 10.5 year sentence, and then it was reduced to 7 years probation, and he pays the victims at a rate of $3,000 a month. We're talking the judgment's what, $2 or $2.5 million, something like that. That's a sin because these people can shell that money out instantly. They just don't want to completely tip the apple cart because there are too many other important players involved in this. And
well,
let's not forget the children.
Well, of course. I mean, I'm on a radio show talking about a mob family for one reason and one reason only.
Yes.
Tonight when I go to sleep, I'm going to go to sleep with the knowledge that innocent children are being sodomized by the perpetrators that these corrupt judges have given them to for money.
Mm-hmm.
And that I've given my life on behalf of these children. Because I have a duty to do that in my way of thinking. So.
Well, yes, I mean, it's only natural. They're your children. And
no, I'm not saying that this is happening to my children.
Well, I'm speaking.
My children are with their abuser, but I'm talking about the children who have been taken by Child Protective Services and the children who have been taken in the family courts who have been directly given to sexual predators.
Mm-hmm.
And who are being sexually abused every evening. And I feel that, personally, I feel that if these children and if our young soldiers are going across and dying with the belief that they're fighting for our Constitution, you know, if these individuals are giving their lives and whose lives are being taken because of these crimes, that as an American and as an adult, I have a duty to do whatever I can to stop these crimes being committed against these innocent children. So
yes.
The bottom line is what I'm trying to say is I do know that there are honest FBI agents. There are honest IRS agents trying to, and again, that's a whole other issue whether the IRS is even a legal entity. But the point is that there are people, and there is retaliated against as the citizen litigants. They lose their jobs. You know, and then what help are they going to be? And
yes.
Our co-member of our organization, Karen, she was working with a major network reporter for 6 months. And then she got the call from this reporter that the higher up said that they can't cover it. Click.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got, that's why I'm so grateful, Don, for what you're doing in helping expose what's going on your internet radio program, because the mass media is not going to touch this, obviously, because they're controlled by the corporate interests who are benefiting crimes.
Yes.
So the bottom line, though, is we still have the organs of democracy. And, yes, we are the victims. And, yes, we certainly have the right to have our U.S. attorneys file criminal RICOs. But we can't wait for that. And the Congress has passed the statutes that allow for a private citizen to file a civil RICO based on the criminal federal statute 18 U.S.C. 1961 to 1968. And we have to pull ourselves together, even though we're the victims and our children are the victims, and we've got to file these things, these doctors, civil RICOs, as well-pled pleadings. So we can do it.
Okay, Sheila, unfortunately now we are out of time. We've got to close the show, but I want to thank you so much, not just for being on the show, but more so for what you're doing. And I encourage anyone to go to any of the places that Sheila mentioned to find out more about what the IFCA is doing and what Dr. Sheila Mannix is doing in Cook County, Lake County, Illinois, and really across the country, because she's taking a stand for mothers and fathers everywhere. Many people who she's never met are eventually going to benefit from the groundbreaking work she's doing. And she's one person. And if you find it in your heart in any way to help her, please do so. Sheila, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I'll have you on again. Keep me updated. Keep us updated as to what's going on. And
thank you very much, Don.
It's my pleasure, my honor. We've got to say goodnight now to the listening audience. Special thanks to Don Newsom, executive producer of Evident Footprints, and to Seth Hendrick and our new intern, Nicholas, on the sound. And I want to wish everyone a peaceful, light-filled, love-filled good night.